Well, hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City, where we are in the midst of our fall fundraising drive here at the radio station. And you're invited to join in, too. Just dial 888-931-0901 to make your pledge and support community radio here in Kansas City. We've been here a long time, going on 30 years now here at KKFI, and the station just keeps getting bigger and better all the time. But we do need your support for the many things that we do here. So please, call for us, 888-931-0901. You can also pledge online as well. If you go to our website at kkfi.org, sometimes people enjoy doing it that way. I guess it's a little more private for them. But either way, you're still supporting fine community radio here in the area, and we invite you to do so. More on that in a little while. Just remember that number. People are taking phone calls right now at 888-931-0901. More on that a little bit later, but I have a famous man here in the studio with me right now. Yeah, oh, don't be modest now. Devin Carney is with us. He is the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet, and they are doing a world premiere of Romeo and Juliet. It's the 60th anniversary Diamond Jubilee season of the Kansas City Ballet. So you had, Devin, to come up with something really special for that.
You're not kidding. That's for sure. And thanks for having us back on the program.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, it's nice to have you.
It's wonderful to be here.
You're so knowledgeable.
I do my best.
A world premiere. That's a lot. Now, you, as I mentioned, you danced the role of Romeo yourself in your career. But this is different. You have to come up with all new choreography. Of course, it's still the same story, but there are changes and things like that.
Right. Well, you know, having done Romeo in my earlier career, it actually was my first lead role I ever had a chance to do. So I was pretty young when I got a chance to do it the first time. The show, Romeo and Juliet, the play, Romeo and Juliet, is a very wonderful play just in of itself that Shakespeare wrote. And that was something that was first introduced to me way before I even started dancing. When I had the opportunity to consider what would be a big work for our season here. This is a big one, the 60th anniversary, which we're all very excited about at Kansas City Ballet. And I would have to say I believe the city is excited about it, too, because it's quite exceptional to keep an arts organization alive for 60 years and thriving, too, both, which is wonderful in the city. And it speaks a lot to the cultural depth of support within the city for the arts, and the understanding of how important the arts are in our lives. So when I got a chance to think about what would be a big opener for the 60th season, I thought, wow, Romeo and Juliet, that's a big, big, big ballet. It's significant in its dramatic content. There's many different characters within the production, so there's a lot of opportunity for a lot of our artists in the company to be able to sort of stretch their wings, you know, and really experience what it's like to be a dramatic dancer, let alone a technician. So I'm thrilled to have this chance to do it. It's been quite a process, Michael. It's a full-length ballet, and creating a full-length ballet that's a lot of steps.
Oh, I can imagine.
That's a lot of steps.
I can imagine. And when you have to come up with new choreography, and it, of course, won't be the same as when you danced it, but you have to put your own mark on things.
Right. Right. Well, I think the fact that, you know, I'm creating the steps does make that mark. I am grateful for the fact that it is such a very clear story, both dramatically, thanks to Shakespeare, and also musically, thanks to Sergei Prokofiev, who wrote the music, which the Kansas City Symphony will be playing live at every performance, which is thrilling to have such a world-class organization in the pit with us, giving us such a gorgeous live musical sounds. You've got both Shakespeare and you've got Prokofiev, who very diligently in 1935, when he wrote the music, you know, he really thematically followed the story. And actually in the score, you know, you, because I do everything by looking at the score first to learn the music. I mean, I know the music like the back of my hand, but you can always know more about the music. And looking through the score and working with the score, you know, he titles certain sections exactly the place where you would want to have, for instance, Mercutio encounter Tybalt, or where Romeo first meets Juliet, you know, and it's really great to see that actually in the music. So even Prokofiev was telling the story through his music, which makes this process not as daunting, you know, because you've got these great guidelines along the way to help in that process. But yeah, the mark, certainly, you know, I have to make my own mark, and that's just by creating the steps. I will say that the artists of Kansas City Ballet are quite exceptional and very inspiring for me. You know, to create a world premiere full-length ballet, there were certainly certain artists in the company that were very inspiring to me, and they also are a part of that creative process. It's not just me giving them steps. It's collaborative work in terms of looking at, like, giving them a step or a phrase of choreography and then watching how they do it and then seeing what perhaps they might more naturally do than what I would think would be the steps. So, you know, I was constantly, and still am, because, you know, we still have a few more days till we're on stage this weekend. You know, there's a constant sort of, like, refining that's going on along the way. That's through watching the dancers of Kansas City Ballet and seeing how they take to the steps that they're given. And they're doing an incredible job. Incredible. It's going to be such a beautiful work to see these dancers dive off the deep end and go for it, you know?
Oh, sure. And it's not just a story about young love. It's a story of two warring families.
Yeah.
So there's battle scenes, which you have to arrange in dance to doing things. And I guess you're very proud of that.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Tell me about arranging.
Sorry, Michael.
Tell me about arranging those.
I'm moving my arms all over the place.
Yes. He's very excited about that.
Well, yeah, there's this thing, you know, Romeo and Juliet, of course, you know, during that time period, in the late 1500s, the play was written between 1591 and 1595. Nobody's really sure exactly where, you know, specifically within those 4 years the play was officially done and when it began and when it finished, but they estimate 91 to 95, 1500s. You know, sword fighting was the weapon of choice. Guns were not really being used yet, although I think the Spanish started acquiring guns. But this is in Italy, right? We're in Verona, Italy. And épées and swords and broadswords and long swords were those weapons of choices, and daggers, you know. So there are warring factions going on in this city, the Capulets and the Montagues. And there are, you know, scenes within the play where, you know, fights have to occur. And I mean, it says that right in the play, you know, Mercutio and Tybalt fight. And that's all it says.
Oh.
All right.
So you're giving a lot of leeway there.
So you're given a lot of opportunity to, you know, come up with some creative ideas. The great thing with Prokofiev is that fight becomes a lot longer musically than just simply they fight and then Mercutio is, you know, stabbed. I've always enjoyed stage combat since I did Romeo and Juliet the first time in my early career. And I really respect and admire a good fight. You know, even all, you know, you see these movies with, you know, either fist fights or, you know, somebody's got a whip and another guy's got a beer stein and, you know, somehow they fight each other, you know, And, you know, the thing with anything in movies or plays that involves fighting is that it's something actually that, when I was a kid, I really, before I knew about dance, I wanted to be a stuntman. And I used to, like, throw myself down a set of stairs, to roll down a set of stairs to see how do you do that? Or, you know, jump off a high ledge or something, you know, like the lower part of a garage and roll out of it, you know, and it was just like, wow, this is cool. And and watching, you know, guys in Westerns, you know, when they would get shot and they fall off the balcony, well, you know, they landed on a mattress or something, right? But it's just that whole concept of creating an illusion of danger. The sword fighting is something that was quite exciting for me to do the first time I did it, and have grown in my appreciation of it over the years. And it is a truly an art form, stage combat work. You have to, it's a whole language, Michael. There's a whole set of terminologies. It's not just, I'm going to try to stab you here, you know, or there. There's positions that come from ancient times that are used in terms of first position is your, you know, your lower left leg. Second position is your lower right leg. Third position is your upper right arm. Fourth position is your upper left arm. Fifth is you're defending the fifth position, which is your head. And your whole terminology, you know, is based on these five parts of the body. As you get the longer you've been in the business and the more fights you get a chance to do, the more it becomes like a whole new language that you can communicate in. I've always wanted to choreograph my own fights, and this is like one of the first times. I've done some smaller fights, but this is my first chance to really go at it full force. It has been quite exciting to do both broadsword fighting with the Lords, Lord Capulet and Lord Montague, and do a fight with them, and also the epic type work with the Capulet and Montague guys, the groups, and also some more complicated fights between Mercutio and Tybalt, then Romeo and Tybalt. And even a hand-to-hand combat fight between Paris and Romeo with just one dagger. So there's all these different interesting fights to do, and they take a lot of rehearsal, because you're dealing with hard objects. They're not sharp, but, you know, they're not like, you know, filed down to be able to really hurt people. But, you know, if you get whacked by a sword, it can hurt if you're, you know, hit on the side of the face or something like that. And injuries can occur from that. So it has to be done in a very controlled environment at first, and you have to learn the positions and all of this, you know, slow progression to getting to the point where we're fighting at speed. And the men are doing a fantastic job. But I'm telling you, the end of Act 1 is just mass pandemonium with these fights. It's just like the whole village is warring against each other at this one moment before the Prince of Verona comes in and breaks the whole thing up. You know, going back to your comment, you know, there are warring factions. And, you know, there's a political aspect to this whole play between the Capulets and the Montagues, and the Prince of Verona represents, you know, sort of like the new order of things, because he keeps trying to stop these two families who are bearing ancient grudge against each other, and the only way they seem to be able to take care of business is killing each other. And the Prince of Verona wants nothing to do with that. He wants peace. He's the man of compromise and of dignity, and of he is the authority in the city. And it's quite interesting, this whole political undertone that is right there within the whole play that was going on. And, you know, it's still very appropriate even today, you know, with how people just sometimes can't get along, and you need somebody in the middle of it all saying, look, we've got to figure out a way to find a path forward that we can all coexist. And that's really one of the big pushes of the entire play. The story is that we need to figure out a way to coexist in the world.
Shakespeare was much emulated. West Side Story is said to be an emulation of Romeo and Juliet. Yeah. And even if you think about it, folks, and a lady was on my program last week who was on Dallas for a short time, even that was. So think about it. The warring families, the Barnes and the Ewings, and what was the big problem early on? Well, the son of the Ewings and the daughter of the Barnes got together. Similar plots. And Shakespeare was original with his plots, but they're very much copied mm-hmm. over the years. And Romeo and Juliet has been plays. It's been an opera. It's been a ballet.
Movies, right?
Movies over the years. And so it's a very well-known story and very, very apropos in your 60th anniversary mm-hmm. season. Tell me about some of the performers in the show.
Well, we've got Juliet, obviously, and Romeo being performed by Tempe Ostergren and Kalina Burks and Molly Wagner are the Juliets, and our Romeos are Lamine Pereira and Fu Liang Fu and Michael Davis. They are taking on the roles in their own ways. It's a very personal role, the role of Romeo and Juliet, the title roles. They require your full invested energy in the process, and I'm not speaking just physically, but emotionally. It has so much dramatic content. Those two roles.
It has to be difficult for the performers. They're telling this story, but they're doing it without words. They're interpreting what's going on
right.
through their dancing.
Right. And I'll tell you the fun part about this production, unlike older classical ballets. There was a lot of dependency, like in Sleeping Beauty or Swan Lake or Giselle, on, ballet pantomime, where, you indicate you and I dance here, or you will die, or, whatever, okay? And there's certain movements that are done to that. Well, Romeo and Juliet, we don't do that. So it is all played out through just simply dancing, which is quite cool, especially with this Prokofiev score. It helps a lot that there's such thematic content within the score. And the dancers are loving it. They are rising to the occasion quite beautifully.
I'll bet that music is very dramatic.
Oh, yeah.
It would have to be. And they have to interpret that through their movement.
Yep. Yeah, well, I'll tell you that, frankly, this music is so inspiring from a dancer's point of view. If you can't be inspired when hearing this music, then, there may not be much in your soul for
sure.
for being a performer, because it is so dramatic. And, the thing with choreography is that my responsibility, is to find the dramatic content both in the music and pair that with steps. So my hope, of course, is that the dancers are fully inspired by the music as well as in the steps they're performing. And so far, it's been quite beautiful to see what they've done. And they, every show will be different because it's a very personal role. I mean, the step might be exactly the same, like they're going to do a grand jeté, but how they get to that grand jeté, or how Romeo and Juliet perform the balcony pas de deux when they really seal the deal about their love, in private, in Juliet's private courtyard, there's all these beautiful scenes. Oh my goodness, Michael.
And without doing the words that
right.
we all know. That's the difficult part, interpreting that through their movement rather than through their words.
Well, thankfully, we've got an iconic story, right?
Oh, very much so.
There is a lot of the story I don't think a lot of people really know, but there's enough of we know about Romeo and Juliet from growing up as kids. I believe that there's adequate descriptive movement that will help tell that story.
And I'm always surprised. There's always someone who doesn't know the ending. and it shocks me sometimes.
Yeah.
I remember a lady commenting, and I hate to give away endings ever.
Uh-huh.
But this lady says, I was surprised at first. I thought it was him, and she thought it was him, and,
uh-huh.
and then it was her, and then it was him again. And but that's all part of the story.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
But it is. So I suppose she was much surprised and enjoyed it more probably because
well,
of that.
Go.
It just surprised me that she didn't know the ending.
Yeah,
it's such an iconic story.
Yeah,
that has been being performed in various versions
mm-hmm.
for many, many years. When did they first make a ballet out of it originally?
Well, 1940. Prokofiev wrote the score in 1935, but it needed to go through quite a few revisions, apparently, from what I've heard about, and finally made its way to the stage for a full-length performance in 1940. So, we're looking at something that's 77 years old musically.
Sure.
Is that right? 77 years.
We're speaking with Devin Carney, the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet. They are doing a world premiere, a lot of pressure on him, of Romeo and Juliet. They're opening their 60th anniversary Diamond Jubilee season. Performances begin on Friday the 13th. Oh, my. At 7:30 p.m. Performances. But you're from New Orleans. You're not.
That's it, right.
No mysticism involved with Devin.
No.
Performances continue Saturday the 14th at 7:30. A matinee on Sunday the 15th at 2 o'clock p.m. Performances then continue the next weekend, Friday the 20th at 7:30, Saturday the 21st at 7:30, and conclude on Sunday the 22nd with a 2 o'clock p.m. matinee performance at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call for more information, 816-931-8993. Or online at their website, kcballet.org, speaking with Devin, and the costuming. The original costumes as well as the original dance movement?
Well, the costumes and sets are being rented, but what's really exciting about this production, for me personally, Michael, is that the sets and costumes designed by Alain Vaez, who is the same designer who did our recently new produced Nutcracker. Well, his first full-length ballet he ever did was Romeo and Juliet, and that was for Boston Ballet, and that was in 1984. And on opening night, I was Romeo in that production. We're using those same sets and costumes.
Oh, really?
And my name is still in the costume of Romeo.
How ironic.
And it is really, you know, it's such a near and dear production when it comes to the visuals for me, because it's very inspiring for me to have those sets and costumes for this world premiere of my telling of the work. And it's helped a lot, frankly, because I know I can see the sets in my eye. You know, I'm telling the dancers daily, you know, now this has three steps up. They're about two or three feet tall when you get to the top. And, you watch out for this one step. It's a little shorter than the others. I mean, there's so much that's still in my mind from when I first performed Romeo and Juliet that I remember about the show. But the sets, they're breathtaking, frankly. They're backlit sets as well as frontlit, which means there's some density differences in the paint, right? So you send light through the back of the drop as well as from the front, and you can create different times of day lighting wise, like a early morning looking through a window, you know, and or midday or night, and it all depends on how the light is done from both the front and the back of the sets. They are just phenomenal sets, and the costumes are gorgeous. The colors are beautiful. They're very period in terms of their colors, and there's just such a clear difference between the Capulets and the Montagues, you know, and of course the Montagues are blues and the Capulets are black and red, you know, so that represents the blood, you know, which is the more intense family. And there's a role called Fate in the ballet that I've added, who is not a spoken character in the play, but it's a force in the play. If you do study Romeo and Juliet, there's a lot of commentary about this constant undertone of destiny and fate that takes Romeo and Juliet on this incredible journey. So there, that is a person who I've decided to personify. Mm-hmm. And there's some spoken words at the very beginning of the ballet, which is I wanted to get Shakespeare's words in there somewhere to inspire the audience as we begin the evening. So, you know, there's a lot of production values that I'm very excited about, that are, of course, going to lend to a phenomenal beginning of our 60th season. It's just going to be incredible. I hope, you know, everybody can come and see it, because it's going to be one of those ballets that will mean a lot to a lot of people, and will be very much quite a journey for those who have the opportunity to come and see it, as well as for the dancers on stage.
Oh, sure. Sounds exciting for you. Opens on Friday the 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. The number to call, once again, for more information, 816-931-8993, or online. You can make your arrangements as well at kcballet.org. An exciting story to open your 60th anniversary Diamond Jubilee season.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
I bet you are. Mm-hmm. And a lot of more challenges to come.
That's it, of course.
For the rest of the season as well. Devin Carney has been our guest. He has been the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet since 2013, I believe.
That's right.
And but before that, started in New Orleans as a very young man, and he danced the role of Romeo. So keep that in mind as you watch his choreography as well. Then to Boston, then to Cincinnati, then to here, but lots of stops in between and traveling on the world. Next time you come, I'm going to work in some time to ask you about working with Nuria, if that had to have been exciting as
well.
That
was amazing.
I'll bet so.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being with us and telling us all about it. Romeo and Juliet opens the 60th anniversary Diamond Jubilee season of the Kansas City Ballet. Performances begin on Friday the 13th at 7:30 for the next two weekends, a Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday afternoon matinee schedule at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. 816-931-8993 or online at kcballet.org. I want to thank my guest, Devin Carney, for being with us as they open the new season of the Kansas City Ballet. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hope everything goes well. I'm sure it will. Very exciting.
Well, I appreciate your support. Your radio station has faithfully supported us over the years and shows a continual interest in the cultural scene within the city. And as a leader of one of those cultural institutions, I really much, very much thank you for all you do for us.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for doing so. And of course, our fall fun drive is going on.
There it is.
You can participate, ladies and gentlemen. Just dial 888-931-0901. Or if you prefer to be more private, you can do it online at kkfi.org. Radio station's been around since, when did it sign on? I think it was like March 1st, 1988. And I didn't begin my show for another year. But still, that's been quite a haul, serving the community, things undercovered or underserved. That's been our message from the very beginning, and like to have organizations like the Ballet and others on the air to do that. So I'll give two numbers now, one for the fun drive, 888-931-0901. That's to donate to KKFI, or the Kansas City Ballet's number, 816-931-8993. Don't be confused. When we return after our message, we'll have much more to bring you when we come back. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
And we're going to jump in here real quick to remind you that we are in our fall fun drive. I know Michael just reminded you that, but we've got a couple minutes to make the case for you to support community radio. My name is Mike Murphy, and joining me in the studio is Sam Weitzman. Hi, Sam.
Hey.
What do you think about Arts Magazine? You're always in the green room, and you always seem to know half the guests that come on this program.
Well, I'm fortunate to work in the arts in Kansas City, and I know firsthand how amazing the arts community is in Kansas City. And the other thing I know is that sometimes it can be a challenge finding what you want to go see or support. And Arts Magazine is a service that KKFI provides to you. And letting you know what's going on in town, whether it's ballet or theater or performing or visual arts, music performances. Arts Magazine has been doing that for nearly 20 years. Michael Hoag has been around KKFI. And I know it's important to you since you're listening now, and you can call us at 888-931-0901 or go to kkfi.com/donate. To make a generous pledge and support Arts Magazine and arts coverage in Kansas City, which is becoming more of a challenge in one sense. And Arts Magazine and shows like Art Speak Radio, and all of our public affairs programming at noon every weekday can provide those services to you. So put a dollar amount on that service and call 888-931-0901. 1-800-273-8101 and support KKFI and community radio and the voice of your community, the voice of the arts community in Kansas City.
Again, you can go to kkfi.org/donate. That's a swift, secure way to do things. Or you can make that phone call, make that personal connection with the volunteers that came in to make this fund drive a success. 888-931-0901. That's 888-931-0901.
Hello, this is Russ Simmons asking you to support KKFI, your community radio station where you hear radio like you've never heard it before. KKFI provides a voice for those who normally aren't heard in our community. In a nation that values diversity and free speech, KKFI is an invaluable local asset. If you want entertainment and information that you cannot get anywhere else, if you share KKFI's mission, then call 888-931-0901 and make your pledge today. That's 888-931-0901. Or if you prefer, go online to kkfi.org and make your pledge. Call now at 888-931-0901.
Freeze frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Is the highly anticipated sequel to the 1982 sci-fi classic Blade Runner merely a replicant? Nope. Happily, Blade Runner 2049 is a compelling film noir follow-up that stands on its own. Ryan Gosling plays an LAPD officer who hunts down replicants, renegade bioengineered humans. Ultimately, he's led to unravel the mystery of his own life and confront a former Blade Runner played by Harrison Ford. It's a stylish, smart, and visually arresting philosophical thriller. Throw a disaster movie and a romantic soap opera into a blender and you get The Mountain Between Us, a story about two strangers who are forced to work together to survive after their plane crashes on a snowy mountaintop. Idris Elba and Kate Winslet have the charisma and acting chops to elevate what would otherwise be a drab romantic drama. All you need to say about Victoria and Abdul is that Oscar winner Judi Dench is in it. She plays Queen Victoria, who befriends an Indian footman played by Bollywood star Ali Fazal. Against the wishes of her staff, he becomes her teacher and confidant. This low-key drama may not be accurate history, but it's entertaining speculation. And just when you thought there weren't any more stories to tell about World War II, we get 13 minutes. It's the story of German citizen Georg Elser, a carpenter who, completely on his own, created a time bomb that just missed killing Hitler by 13 minutes. It may not be as compelling as it should have been, but it's a solidly made and interesting thriller. Also opening this week, Manola, the boy who made shoes for lizards, is a documentary about the legendary fashion designer. Hugh Bonneville and Gillian Anderson star in Viceroy's House, a historical drama about the Indian transition from British rule to independence in 1947. And literally right before Aaron is a romantic comedy starring Justin Long and Colby Smulders. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM.
Freeze Frame!
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. We are in the midst of our fall fundraising drive here at KKFI to help raise money to help support community radio, KKFI. It's so important. It's so important. Shows like this, with interviews we're about to do with two of the actors from the Kansas City Repertory Theater, would be hard pressed to do because we can offer them more time on the air than some of the other stations can as well. Just one of many reasons why you should support us here at KKFI. In fact, the manager of the station, Michael Idle, is with me right now. Now, in your opinion, being a suit, a management here at KKFI, what are some of the reasons that you think people should donate to KKFI?
Michael, it's nice to be on the show. Thank you for asking me. But I wanted at least impart to the listening audience what you were talking about right at the beginning, which was they can't get this kind of programming anywhere else in Kansas City, much less in the Midwest. And so when you decide to volunteer some of your hard-earned money to KKFI, it is to support shows like this, quite frankly, because without this station, this kind of show will not exist. And without you, the listener, supporting KKFI and donating to KKFI, it's possible the station could actually go off the air at some point in the future. So that's what it's all about, is making sure that shows like this can continue on.
And you can call, you know, even if you're not in the immediate metro area, if you happen to be listening to us online in Boston, and I know I said earlier in the broadcast we had listeners in Boston. I know because we know that from the computer that we have listeners in Boston. But if you happen to be one of those people in Boston, you can still call and make a donation, you know, charge free. 888 888- 931-0901. People are more happy donating online as well.
I also wanted to point out that sustaining membership is a great choice now, because you don't have to pay the entire donation right at one time. You can spread it out over time, and that's very convenient for a lot of folks.
That is absolutely true. The website address, kkfi.org. You can make your contribution there to help support community radio. Thank you, Mr. Lytle, sir. You have to call the boss, sir. Thanks so much. Hey, once again, 888-931-0901. Help support community radio. We'll be back and talk about a little bit of this later. But we have two of the actors from the Kansas City Repertory Theater with us. They are doing the play Fences by August Wilson. I had a chance to meet Mr. Wilson years ago before he passed away. It was shortly after his appearance on 60 Minutes. They brought some of the media people over to the Rep, and we sat at the table with him and had some wine together and talked about his plays. He told us about his series, this Pittsburgh series of plays that he has written. And this is one of those plays. It's called Fences. And it opens up officially Friday the 13th. You're not superstitious, are you guys? And runs through the 5th of November at the Kansas City Repertory Theater, on the Copacan stage, by the way, at the Kansas City Repertory Theater. And the two actors with me are Rufus Burns, who plays the role of Corey. He has appeared at the Unicorn Theater in that play that I can't say the whole name of because they'd take me off the air right away. But the guy with the hat, let's say. He's done that play. He's also appeared in The Christmas Carol, in the film's Terrible Love. In fact, the website for film said that you were known for your appearance in that movie as well, and also in the film Dear Brother as well, and probably many other credits that I didn't have the time to find. Chester Gregory plays the role of Lyons. He became famous doing the Jackie Wilson story at the Chicago Black Ensemble. Is that the one?
Yeah, Black Ensemble Theater. Yeah,
that was your big break, according to articles on the internet. You have also appeared in Hairspray, Dreamgirls, Sister Act, and you won an NAACP Theater Award for your work as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the program, Fences, another one of August Wilson plays. The Rep has done quite a few of them over the years. Tell us a little bit about Fences. What are your characters, and how do you fit into the story?
Yeah. So the play Fences, you know, and with playwrights like August Wilson, the play can be about a lot of different things depending on which character you're looking at the play from. And so I get the privilege of playing Corey in this one, which is Troy's teenage son, who is a high school student, who is a very gifted athlete who's looking to go to college. He's being recruited to go to college for a scholarship. And so during this time, during the 1950s, this is a very big opportunity. And so from Corey's point of view, it revolves around his relationship with his dad and his family.
So it's a father and son story. But the title is Fences, so there's a baseball element to the story as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Troy was a standout baseball player in the Negro Leagues. And so that cast quite a big shadow over his son's throughout the play.
And isn't that ironic? The Negro Leagues Museum is right here in Kansas. Have you visited it, either of you, during your visit here?
Not yet. We're going to go out and get some field trips in when we, right after we finished teching the show. We've been knee deep in rehearsal, and we're about to start being in at the theater about 10 hours a day and stuff like that. So as soon as it's up, we're going to get out and go to all these museums.
Yeah, especially that, since your play is about a man who played in the Negro Leagues as well. Yeah. Tell us about your character in the show.
Character, his name is Lyons, and he was, he grew up without his father because Troy was away for 15 years in prison, and so it's about like sort of like that strained relationship of trying to rekindle a relationship with the family you haven't known while growing up. And so it's very interesting. It has a lot of dynamics with family and fatherhood and motherhood and all of those things, and taking on responsibility whether you like somebody or not, and what that feels like and what that really is about for humans, you know. So it's very interesting hearing like all these layered lessons within the show. Like every monologue, every character has something very rich that they share that the audience can all relate to.
All of his plays were like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. The one, the title is escaping me right now, but the cabs.
Jitney.
Yes, mm-hmm. Jitney.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, so I saw the competitiveness in that and the richness of the characterizations and all that went into that for them back in that era. He wrote in different decades. I know that. A play for each decade. Where is this one set?
This starts in 1957, and it goes for 7 years.
Yeah, right? 1965 or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it we always want to please our father? Yeah. Even if we don't get along, we still want to please them on a certain level.
Yeah.
I don't know that I was ever successful doing that. I tried right up until my father's death. But what's that like in the story?
Well, especially when you have a father of such stature, it's you're natural to want to please and to look up to your father and want to be as good as one's father, because it's a, you know, it's almost the rite of passage. And so that sort of pressure causes us to you know, do things or seek approval because we want to make it to the next step of manhood, you know. And so I think that it's about stepping into that threshold of manhood, and the father is the key to that.
Yes, it is. Yes, he is, especially father of stature.
Yes.
And this man was a man of stature.
Yeah, the more accomplishments, the greater the shadow, it seems.
We have to realize that we not be able to live up to that, that some people can surpass their father, our son coming after us at the same time.
The balance of also knowing, you know, not only like where your father's expectations of your own accomplishments, but also coming into your own. And so, you know, that's you know, what Corey kind of says, like, you know, he doesn't want his father's shadow. And Lion says, you know, okay, I know you carry people's rubbish, but that's not for me. And so, you know, and so he's like, well, you know. And so it's like that whole kind of balance of, okay, well, you're not going to follow my path and look at, you know, the mistakes that you're making. But it's like, okay, I've seen that, but now I want to still have my own journey. You know, and I also think about that, you know, with me being a father myself. I have a son, and I always encourage him to, I always try to give him the best of my experience, but also not try to give him the baggage and the bias of my experience as well, so that he has his own, so he can, you know, come into his own man and his own manhood and discover that what that means for himself, which will be different what it is than what it is for me.
Oh, sure. See, now you're a man of accomplishment. You've won awards. it might be hard for your son to, not being critical, it might be hard for your son to come to what you've accomplished so far, and you may well accomplish more in the future.
Well, yeah, and I think that's one of the key things, right, is that knowing sort of like your own lane, I guess. So like Einstein said that if you have a fish think that, I'm misquoting, but if you judge a fish based on it being on its ability to fly like a bird, you have the fish thinking that it's an idiot. Oh. And so like I think we all have our own unique abilities, and those abilities make us give us our own like superpower. That's what Janelle Monáe said,
yes,
right?
So
I think that even though we have this, we're ultimately this mix of pool, this pool mix of genes from our parents, that's a combination, right? The best and worst of, or whatever that is, we use those things to become our own.
Chester was referring to what's come to be known as the pond theory.
Uh-huh.
If your perspective is only the pond and you don't really know what's beyond the pond, then the pond is all you know, and you judge everything based on the pond. And it makes us wonder, you know, here we are on Earth in a big universe. Are we just in our own small pond right now? little philosophy there. philosophy here on the Arts Magazine Show. But I think we all know what you mean.
Yeah, yes, sir.
That is all something, you know, that is yet to come, really. We don't know that. You have to relate well in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that. Did you know each other before you came here?
No. This is our first time meeting and working together. And that's the beauty of sort of doing a theater. And, you know, you meet these new people and you get to, you know, extend your family a bit. And so that's been a pleasure working with everyone in the cast. It's been awesome.
Yeah, for sure. It's my first time working with Rufus Burns. However, I have worked with the majority of the cast before. Greta Oglesby, who plays Rose, I've worked with her many moons ago. My first show was with her in Chicago. A lot of the actors are from Chicago.
Oh.
And And so she's been not only someone I've admired career-wise, but also a great friend. And so with me, it's like a reunion of friends and family. Because not only Greta, but also A.C. Smith, who plays Troy, and Alfred Wilson and I, we were together at the Goodman Theater at Two Trains Running, which was my first August Wilson piece. This is my second. Mm-hmm. And so A.C., Greta, and Alfred are like three of my favorite actors I've ever worked with in the past. And so like to know that they were going to be a part of this was like a dream come true for me. I told Ron O.J. Parson, who I love his work as well, told him yes immediately as soon as I found out. And then we have, you know, Rufus and then Walter. The cast is amazing. Yeah.
You have a history of doing musicals.
I do. I've done, you know, musicals, but I also like to balance it with plays too, right? Yeah. Sure. I was just here a little bit over a month ago with Motown the Musical as Berry Gordy at the Starlight Theater. Oh. We actually closed the tour here. And so now the next part of my journey starts here as well. So yeah.
Oh yeah, I got to interview the Funk Brothers years ago with a documentary film that they were they did about their reunion after many years.
Standing in the Shadows of Motown, I think
exactly.
is what it's called.
Yeah. Oh, they told some tremendous stories of working those days in Motown. It was really outstanding. We're talking with Rufus Burns and Chester Gregory, two of the actors in the Kansas City Repertory Theater production of Fences by the late playwright August Wilson. It'll be on the Copacan stage, not the one on campus this time, but the Copacan stage downtown. It's in the H&R Block building. On the Copacan stage, the address is 1 H&R Block Way, but that's right down by the Power and Light District. The grocery store is right across the street to the north, and that's where you can see the play in person. The number to call for more information is 816-235-2700, or you can also make arrangements online at kcrep.org. Speaking with Rufus and Chester about the show, anything you'd like to add? It has that baseball background, of course, but it's really a father and son play. Any other elements you'd like to talk with the audience about?
I did find that quote that I was mentioning earlier about from Einstein. Right?
Sure, go ahead.
It says, "Everyone is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing it is stupid."
Well, true. if that's all you know.
Yeah.
Because it's so worlds have to expand, I guess, for that.
People have to recognize their own unique ability, not base their ability to judge on someone else's journey or anything like that.
Jackie Wilson's story,
it was a show that ended up running off and on three years at the Black Ensemble Theater, and it toured. And that's why I guess I'm a big stickler on making sure that quote was right, because I really wholeheartedly believe that you can't distract yourself with other people's journeys or anything like that. You have to trust and follow your own instincts. So I initially almost turned down the Jackie Wilson story because somebody told me, you know, I shouldn't do it. You don't want to get into like doing that kind of acting and singing, that kind of thing, you know, and get, you know, sort of boxed, you know. And so, but I ended up doing it, and then it ended up, you know, allow me to be seen from the producers of Hairspray and then have my Broadway debut and then perform on Broadway for 10 years after that. So, you know, had I turned that down or had I like listened to those naysayers, then my journey would have been different from what it is now, which gives me a chance and opportunity to do what I love every single day, you know. So I'm eternally grateful for that.
Do you enjoy doing musicals more than heavy drama? Or
I enjoy both of them. I think it's all been like one world to me. I've never categorized musicals from plays to recording or whatever. It's all been like art and expression to me. And it's different for different people. Some people like more than one or the other. To me, it's just different seasons of the same year.
Yeah, that's true. People tell me things like that all the time. Roof, tell us about the things you've done.
I got a chance to work the MF-er with the hat, the unicorn, which was just an absolute fun play by Stephen Adley Gurgis. And then my last show at the unicorn was An Octoroon, which was another it was a very wild show, and had a blast doing that as well. Learned a lot. And then the last show at the Rep was the at Raisin in the Sun, where I got to play Joseph Asagai alongside Greta Oglesby. So, it's been a blast. This year's been great, and I'm excited to keep doing more.
I saw you as Was it Dick Wilkins?
Yes, yes. That was back in 2010, right around the time they revamped it. But yeah, got to play Dick Wilkins there and you know, get introduced to the Casey Rep family there. So
that's true. Other than the Unicorn and the Rep, any place that I wasn't able to find?
I've done some stuff at the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, where I got to do Macbeth and also King Richard III. Yeah, and so I graduated from UMKC back in 2012, my MFA. So yeah, I've been here in Kansas City and kind of honing my craft here.
Very few people are accepted in that program, so you must be really good.
Thank you very much. It's a blast. I love the training I get there, and because I went to school there, I got to work with a lot of the local theaters in town, because that's how the program is set up. So while I was studying, I also got to work alongside Eric Rosen and Cynthia Levin and Jeff Church and Sidney Garrett and all of those people like that. So,
oh yeah, you like doing Shakespeare?
I love it. I absolutely love it. And this is, and August Wilson's work is very Shakespearean, you know, with the richness of characters and the heightened stakes of the story. It's they're both the same to me, you know.
Well, when he was still alive, and they had a get together with the media, mm-hmm. over at the Rep, and they just set us all at a table, put some wine down on the table, and he enjoyed a few and talked about his work, and he said he just wanted to tell some stories that he knew about, mm-hmm. or had seen in person.
Yes,
and of course, he being from the Pittsburgh area, he was very proud and set the shows in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and doing a little research on him, I love one quote he said. His cycle was about reclaiming, you know, the history of African Americans in the country. You know, so many times you have, you know, playwrights of different races writing about other races, but sure. Here you have a major playwright writing about his people's experience in his words, in their words. And so, you know, you get this chance to hear this language and some musicality we talk about, you know. And so what he's done is amazing, you know. And I think we're slowly realizing that as we keep producing his work.
He just basically said there were stories he wanted to tell.
Absolutely.
And I assume that these either happened to him, people he knew, mm-hmm. things that he had seen or heard about. And he just wanted to put them on paper.
Absolutely.
And let the folks see them.
Yeah, he was sitting bars and just listen to conversations.
The show once again is called Fences, and the Fences is because of the baseball background. Runs from Friday the 13th through November. I can't help but chuckle. You're not superstitious, either one of you.
Nah.
Don't care? Okay. Through Sunday the 5th at the Kansas City Repertory Theater. Basically first weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then after that, a Tuesday through Sunday run. Sometimes the times are 8:00 p.m. Some are 7 p.m. So you need to check their website to get straight on what that all is. KCREP.org. That's the number to call. And some people like to donate, or some people like to make their arrangements, I should say, online. So for that, go to KCREP.org or call the number 816-235-2700. It's at the Copacan Stage downtown by the Power and Light District. If you had a chance to experience that, or have they kept you rehearsing all the time?
All the time rehearsing.
It's a big Kansas City entertainment district, so you'll get to see some of that as you go along. I want to thank you both for coming.
Right.
Delightful talking to you. Yeah. Rufus Burns, who plays the role of Corey, and Chester Gregory, who plays the role of Lyons, in the Kansas City Repertory production of Fences, opening on Friday the 13th, running through Sunday, November the 5th. Once again, the number to call, 816-235-2700, and the address on the web, kcrep.org. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
And don't you folks forget, we're raising funds for KKFI right now. Volunteers are sitting at the phones, ready to take your call to help support this station, this program, and community radio here in Kansas City. The number to call, even if you're out of town, 888-931-0901. Or some people like to donate online, so go to kkfi.org. Yes, there are premiums, a T-shirt at a certain level. When you call them in, ask them all about that, and they'll let you know what you can do. But it's important that you support community radio and all that goes in it. We can do things that the commercial stations really cannot do. We're more open to that because we're commercial-free, so help us out. Help support community radio, the arts programming especially, but we also have fine jazz, fine blues, fine news programming as well, and we appreciate all of that as well. 888 931-0901. Well, the Jazz Insider is next. Sam Wiseman, he's a musician right here in town. He'll be playing some great jazz for you this afternoon. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.